This is Around the Rim with LaChyna Robinson.
Hello, basketball fans. It's your favorite time of the week. That's right. It's a brand spanking new episode of your ESPNW Women's Basketball Podcast, Around the Rim. And it's WNBA season, people. If you have not heard, and this show will be heavy WNBA. We also have a couple of special guests for you. I'm not going to tell you who they are right now, but you're going to want to stay tuned because we've got a lot to discuss during this show. And yes, I did say this is your host, LaChyna Robinson. Probably, if I did not, it's me, though I do have a little cold or some kind of allergies or whatever. But I'm joined by my very eager co-host who seems to have a lot on her mind, none other than two-time WNBA champion Dev Peters. I mean, Dev, you just gonna call us out on Twitter? Like, you got a lot on, you got things to get off your chest? You can't sleep? Like, what's up?
I mean, y'all were coming at me hard last week about my aces. So this week is payback.
Oh.
It is.
Okay.
You see the standings?
Listen, let me just tell you this. We're about eight games in. Don't
hey,
get,
it didn't keep you from getting on me. So, listen. Yeah, next
That's
today.
Fine. All right. Well, so it's time for Dev to shine today. She's decided it's time for her to get some shine. Also on the show, as per usual, our fantastic and fabulous producer, Tarika Foster Brasby. Y'all having a good summer so far? Can I just say that I love California? I was out there for a wedding, and I might be, like, trying to move my life to the West Coast.
That would be nice.
LaChyna ain't leaving Atlanta.
She on here lying.
I'm just saying.
Bella Wolf ticket.
It's cold in Chicago. It's probably cold in Bristol.
It's beautiful in Bristol.
It was beautiful.
But it rained yesterday.
Was beautiful.
It's like 75.
That's not bad.
I wish. Summertime Shy has clearly been postponed because we have not been getting no good weather.
I need y'all to get it together because I'm trying to make a trip up there, by the way.
Listen, I'm trying to enjoy my summer and they are really killing the whole vibe.
They are killing the whole vibe. So we got a lot to talk about on the show. And actually, now that you say that, Dev, we wanted to talk to you last week about a little movement that you have going on, these orange T-shirts that me and Tarika don't have. So we'll get to that later in the show as well. But I'll just turn it over to Tarika and we'll bounce into the first quarter.
First quarter.
All right, ladies. Well, like LaChyna mentioned, we're actually nine games into the season, or seven, depending on which team you play for.
Right.
And I think it's kind of time for us to start talking about, like, which teams are finding their groove and which ones aren't. On the contrary, there are a couple teams that can't seem to find anything. A groove, a basket, a win, LA, nothing. So we're going to take this first quarter. Super shy, especially considering I picked them. Come on, LA.
Big mad.
Big mad. Anyway, I think we can open up the show playing a little game of hot or not. So I'm going to give you the team, and then I want you to tell me if you think this team is hot or not. Not necessarily like we won a few games, we're on a hot streak, but hot as in like they're in a groove and I think they're on to something, or nah, they playing with us. Okay, so I'm going to start off really easy. All right, first team, the Connecticut Sun. Okay, they set a franchise record on Sunday with their 12th straight home game win, defeating the Storm 81-67. Alyssa Thomas went off, 20-point performance. Jonquel Jones, she's the Eastern Conference Player of the Week, third time this season. They're sitting at the best record at 8-1. LaChyna, hot or scorching hot?
First of all, you said let's start off easy because this is one of your teams. Like, I know you picked LA to win, but you think this should be easy. You're trying to influence my decision by setting that into the question, but that's fine.
We're not talking about me.
Connecticut's hot, right? Like, and let's be real. I don't think there's been any doubt in anyone's mind that they were going to be a great team. Now, yes, with the whole Chennai to LA situation, we had to talk about how that impacted the roster. But when you look around the WNBA, this team was starting with all their pieces, at least all the pieces that they know they were going to have this season, started off healthy. They've got a great coach in Kurt Miller. And, I mean, for the last few years, we've been saying Connecticut's great. Like, their talent level's off the chart. They've got jump shooting efficiency in Courtney Williams. They've got the power of Alyssa Thomas, the leadership of Jasmine Thomas. Like, the cupboard is not bare, even with the departure of Chennai. Like, the one thing we question over the years is their experience, right? because Phoenix seems to be the team that keeps biting them, or Diana Taurasi, and knocking them out of the playoff. But they've got more experience. But honestly, the X factor for me is Jonquel Jones. I mean, Chiney left a big hole in Connecticut because Jonquel came off the bench last season, which, yes, I was one of those people that was hot she was coming off the bench, right? Because I just think she is the future of this league. She's 6'6". She can shoot the three, block shots, can take the ball full court off the dribble, can rebound. Like, what are you going to do with that? You know what I'm saying? Like, she's limitless in her skill set. Now, yeah, she's got some growing up to do. I mean, she hasn't been playing the game that long. It's only her fourth year in the league. But I just think, to me, she elevates this team. If she can be a player that you put the ball in her hands and go to her. Because everybody needs that during the playoffs. Like, you need a Diana Taurasi. You need Sue Bird took over last year. Like, you need an Elena Deladon, whatever the case is. And So Connecticut is hot, and they should be. And I'm not worried about regular season Connecticut. I'm worried about playoff Connecticut, okay? Because in my opinion, in order for them to vie for a championship, they need to finish in the top two in the league. They need a bye to the semifinals, period. And so, yeah, they're hot, and they're a fun team to watch. They've got great fans. Me and Tarika went up there for a game. Like, I love this team. There's nothing to not love. But every team needs a go-to, and Jonquel's ability to develop into that between now and then, because I thought that last year, everybody was all even, you know, like everybody, you didn't really know who they wanted to have the ball in certain situations. Well, I think it needs to be Jonquel Jones, and that needs to be clear, and that's all I have to say on it. They're hot.
You pretty much covered everything on China at this point. I'm going to agree. I'm going to say hot as well. I agree, though, that the – you know, they've had some good seasons the past couple seasons, and really we're just going to have to see what they do in the playoffs, because that's been their Achilles heel. They've done well during the season, got there, and then Phoenix pretty much comes in and shuts all of it down. Jonquel Jones is having an amazing season, and I think they all have this in the back of their minds these past couple years in these playoffs and how it's been going. And so I'll be interested to see once we get to that point, how they handle it and how they take that on. Like, that is in their heads, especially last year, because somebody posted a picture before the game and
Courtney Williams.
Yes, Courtney Williams posted that picture before the game. So, I mean, I think all of that is in the back of their mind, and they're ready this year. They've thought about this off season, and they're coming ready, hot. They're definitely hot.
All right, ladies. Well, we're going to stay easy just to get you warmed up once more. And we're going to bring up the Atlanta Dream, okay? League's worst record failed to the Wings on Sunday. They did play the Indiana Fever earlier today, so they did record their second win today. But this Dream team clearly isn't doing exactly what we thought that they do, even without Angel McCautry. LaChyna, why are they finding it so hard to put the pieces together?
Ooh, boy, it's been a struggle. Man, yeah. Totally unexpected. I mean, I talked about them all preseason, even like we talked about them a lot during the draft. It's just one of those teams that you thought was just going to start off the season in the top four, and it hasn't been the case. I just want to say this. I feel like Angel McCautry is way underappreciated. Let me just start off by saying that. Like, people forget that she has been to the finals three times. Okay, she is a number one pick, but with no other lottery picks on her team. Now, I could be wrong. I worked for the team for 12 years. I forget a thing or two, but the lineups that I remember going, except for maybe one year when Lindsey Harding, I think, was on the roster, like, Angel has carried teams on her back. And she's the kind of player, you know, during, at least from what I can gather from other people, that she's either loved or hated. I've always loved her, but a lot of people don't like Angel, and I think they don't give her the benefit of the doubt. She has matured so much as a player, as a person, as a teammate, as a leader. I can't even begin to tell you how much since 2009 when she was drafted to Atlanta. So I really believe that last year after she got injured, Atlanta was running off of a lot of adrenaline, right? Like, your teammate gets hurt. You want to play for them. They were, you know, in a really good spot after getting Alex Bentley. That's a punch too. Whenever you get a player like Bentley and she comes in and she's ready. Like, they had a lot going for them that allowed them to keep everything going post Angel McCautry. but she is a driving force. Okay. She's a relentless competitor. And if you are on her team, once you step between the lines, there are no more games being played. Like, we are at war. And her attitude is a lot of what that team needed in between the lines. I love Atlanta because they have fun and they're young and they're athletic. You like their style. They get up and down the floor. But they're the type of team that has to have a motor. Like, they have to have someone driving them. I always joke that, for example, Jessica Breland and Elizabeth Williams are like two of the coolest, like one of the best front courts, defensively, arguably the best front courts in the league, but super laid back. You know, Tiffany and Brittany like to have fun. You know, Renee is just gets along so well with everybody on the team, kind of keeps everybody light. But Angel McCautry is the fire. And so to me, they've been missing their fire. And that doesn't excuse all the missed shots, because I understand that, you know, I mean, I've watched the games, obviously, like, they have been really bad on offense on some stretches. But that happens, right? Like, eventually those shots start to go in. But to me, there just seems to be a going through the motions type attitude early on in the season. And, you know, rosters change. They're not exactly the same team that they were last year. But I just think, and it's hard for me to say this because no one should be putting that kind of pressure on Angel. And if she is to return, who knows how she's going to return? Like, she should not have to come back and save this team. To me, this team is talented enough to win without her, to be in good position in the playoffs, to vie for a championship without her. But possibly, I don't know about vie for a championship, but pieces have to change. And right now, everybody is settling into, I guess, some new roles, and it's just taking them a while to get going. But I'm concerned because the season is only 34 games long, and it's time to get a sense of urgency.
Yeah, I agree. They're definitely missing Angel. Like, that has been, I think, like you said, a much bigger blow than people would have expected. But the thing with a team like Atlanta, their MO has always been, they're going to push the pace, they're going to run, they're going to score a lot of points. And although they may be statistically, quote unquote, a defensive team, they're easy to pick apart if you're patient. And so they are the type of team where they're going to try to outscore you. And if they're not doing that, they can easily lose. And that's why over the course of the past, like, 4 or 5 years, you see Atlanta being that team that will consistently could have a 20-point lead on somebody and lose the game. Because defensively, it's not all the way there. If you're a team that's a veteran team and you're patient and you know what type of team Atlanta is, you can easily pick them apart. And so, like you said, they're having trouble scoring right now. And if they don't have that, I don't see how they're going to win games. Because when they're not scoring, which is what they do, and they're pushing the pace and getting a lot of shots off and just outscoring teams, I don't think they have enough defensively to really buckle down and beat somebody there. So they've just been having a really hard time. And unless they start hitting shots again, I don't know at this point what they're going to do. Because like you said, our season is short. It's not very long. If you come out slow, it's really hard to pick it back up and get back in a groove, especially with a year like this year where there's so many teams that are playing really well and doing a lot of different things and starting out well. And you have a lot of different teams coming up as contenders, even teams that we weren't even initially considering. It's going to be really difficult for them to get back. And like you said, you can't depend on a player that's coming back from an ACL injury to come in and make that type of impact. It's just not realistic. I mean, when you come back from ACL, you're going to be back on the court, but mentally and physically, your body is not on the same page. Like, I know firsthand, you're going to get back on the court and physically you're ready to play and you're out there, but sometimes mentally it's not all the way there. Like, your mind is telling you to do one thing and your body is just not reacting to it. So even if Angel does come back this season, you can't expect that she'll have that type of impact where she can completely turn this team around. It really takes a full year for you to get everything back, even after like a full year into being back playing, for you to get everything back that you once had. So I mean, they're having a tough time right now. They really have to get it together offensively to even have a shot. But if they don't at this point, it's going to be really difficult for them to dig themselves out of this hole.
Well, and that's what they did against Indy. I mean, they hit shots. You know what I'm saying? And like Tiffany Hayes, I think they said, has had an ankle injury. She had a great game against Indy. So if she can get healthy, like the way she played against Indy, she could play like that every night. Will she play like that every night? I don't know. But she can when she's healthy.
Thing about it is it's not going to get any easier for Atlanta in the upcoming days because they're going to be taking on Connecticut, and then directly after that they're going to have to face Washington. And if Washington looks anything like the way they've looked all season, especially last night, it's not going to get any easier. So should be interesting to see how they figure out how to keep the momentum that they had today going. Moving on to New York. Amanda Zowie B played lights out, scoring a career high of 37 points. Kia Nurse supported her with 26 of her own when they took on LA this past weekend, and they looked pretty good. They're 3-5 in the standings. They've won two of their last three, but are they hot? Dev, hot or not?
I'm going to go with not. And here's the thing. It started with Vegas, which we discussed. Asia Wilson did not have a good game. And they were able to push that out. It was a good game for New York, I think. I think that's a game that they really needed to get their confidence up in and really start to figure things out. Then they beat a Lynx team that had just lost Jess Shepherd, who was a big contributor for them as well, and then got absolutely blasted by Vegas. I think Tina didn't have any rebounds that game. That was embarrassing. That game was just flat out embarrassing. And to come back from a really good win they had at home against them, you can't have a game like that. And then even with their win against the Sparks had just come off a back-to-back for that game as well. I think they got a couple wins, which is good. But and obviously, they don't have Bria Hartley. I think Amanda Bazawi-B is about to leave for that as well. So they're already low on numbers. They've came out struggling as it was, and now they're going to have even more people gone. So they've been having trouble scoring, and then to have a game like they had in Vegas, Vegas just completely annihilating them. Like there was at that point nothing that they can do, and you really can't have any games like that, especially when you're trying to build on this type of momentum. And so I just don't see it. I still don't see them gelling like they should. I don't see the offense that I think that they could have. It seems like every night they're out there just trying to figure it out, and it looks like that. And they've gotten a couple wins, and I'm glad that they've gotten a couple wins, but it still looks like to me that they're still trying to figure it out. So I'm definitely going to go with not. I don't think that this stint is going to last very long.
I'm going to have to agree with you, Dev. You know, and it has nothing really to do with the New York Liberty as much as it does the rest of the league. And I'm going to keep honing on that. Like, WNBA fans, if you're not paying attention, like, Diana Taurasi is expected to make her return any moment. And Candace Parker, even though she didn't look like herself in her debut, is back on the court. So other teams are getting better. Here's what I like about the Liberty. In that win against LA, for example, Tina Charles was 4-for-17. I don't think she scored her first basket until almost halftime. Amanda Zowie B had 37 points. Can we talk about her? Like, I'm so happy for this kid because she has had to go through a lot to get to where she is. Like, first of all, the physical transformation from her Minnesota days. Don't forget, she was one of those players that left a year of eligibility on the table. So she left school early. Saying she's ready for the WNBA. To me, those are the most pressure-packed situations when players are like, all right, I'm ready to go to the next level. Like, all eyes are going to be on you. And she's had that. But to have her skill set, like, I mean, I'm watching the LA game, and she's stepping out. Now, mind you, she had not hit threes like this, so I understand LA playing off her a little bit early. But, I mean, she's stepping out, knocking down three-pointers like it's nothing. I mean, she's 6'5", and she's gotten herself into better physical shape, so she's a quicker rebounder. She can play a little bit more on the perimeter. She's an excellent complement to Tina Charles, who obviously can score from anywhere but likes to roam around in the painted area, and not as far from there. But, I mean, for her to score 37 points on LA. I mean, a team that has the services of Chiné and Neko Ogumike, who are both great defenders. I just think says a lot. I mean, she was 7 for 8 from 3-point line. So we see this team maturing in places that they need to mature. Kia Nurse is playing better, but let's not miss this one thing that I think has been the key to the Liberty's success, and that is Tanisha Wright. Like, they started playing Tanisha Wright more, and all of a sudden, this team got better. Like, not only does she have championship experience, but she knows how to make big plays. Like, she is a true floor leader. She's a true general, okay? And she had some DNPs before this recent stretch where they started winning. I mean, before June 9th, and I don't know if she was injured or not, but she hadn't played since June 1st. And that June 9th game she played in was the win against Vegas, and she played 18 minutes. She played 22 against Minnesota, only 10 against Vegas the second time, 16 against L.A. But she's just doing the little things. And in those games, she had 4 assists, 5 assists, 2 assists, 3 assists, even in somewhat limited minutes. So I just cannot say enough about what a player like Tanisha Wright does and what she has done for what we've seen from the Liberty and from a leadership standpoint. She takes a lot off of Tina Charles' shoulders as well, because she can step up in those situations. These young guards need somebody. Even Brittany Boyd, though she started and she's got experience in this league, she's a great player. She still does not have even close to the experience that Tanisha Wright has. So I just want to recognize too why that's happening, but I just don't think the Liberty will have enough as everyone else is getting their full arsenal back. They don't have enough to finish in the top 4 in the league. Can they make the playoffs? Yeah, they can make the playoffs. They can make the playoffs. But are they hot? No. So Tarika, shut that down. No.
It is shut down. It is shut all the way down. All right. Last one, ladies. No Brianna Stewart on the floor. Natasha Howard is averaging 20 points and 10 boards a game. So I'm wondering about the Seattle Storm. To me, they're good enough to hang around with some of the best teams in the league. But then a couple of games later, you'll see them play and you'll ask yourself, like, what's going on? Is this team really who we thought they were? Dev, we'll start with you here. Seattle Storm, hot or not?
I'm going to go with hot. I mean, initially, even coming off when we first started talking about them at the beginning of the season, I thought they had enough. I think they have some great players on that team. And they honestly, they've kind of been showing out a little bit this year. Like, they've really stepped up with the losses of Stewie and Sue Bird. And especially, like, I want to talk about even, like, the D.C. game. Granted, D.C. lost Christy within, like, 2 minutes of the game. It was very early.
Oh, my gosh. The quickest rejection ever.
That, like, was crazy. Yeah, and like, I thought it was a little extra.
Yeah, the officials need to get out their feelings.
Yeah.
Like, really?
I don't think she should have got either one of those texts, to be honest. I thought that they were being really emotional, and she definitely should have been in the game. So with that said, I thought they played a great game against D.C., but they also lost Jordan Canada that game as well.
Mm-hmm.
So they lost Canada, who is really, like, the head of the snake right now for them, and really having to, like, step into this huge role, and has been doing really well with that. And they had people coming up. Blake Dietrich came in the game, and, like, they had a lot of people that they had to have step up that haven't really had a huge role this year even. And we're able to close out that game. And what was so impressive to me about that game in particular was that they were down for most of that game, and down pretty good, like a good solid 10. Even within the last, like, 4-3 minutes or so, they were down like 5 or 6 and were able to maintain their poise and just chip away and stay focused to close out that game. So for me, they've been extremely impressive. Like I said, with their poise and being able to figure things out no matter what's going on with the team, no matter who they lose, people are stepping up and making things happen. So I'm going to go with hot. They've been doing their thing.
So I agree that Seattle is hot. And I was the person, I'm going to admit right now, because I was wrong, that came on the show early in the season and said they weren't going to make the playoffs. I think they're going to make the playoffs. This team has really impressed me with their balance, how they bought into the defense. Like, Coach Kloppenburg has done an outstanding job. Prayers up once again for Dan Hughes, that they're expecting to return at any time. But I just like this team. And they have a star now in Natasha Howard, the way that she has developed and come along. I mean, she is shooting the ball at a ridiculous efficiency. Mercedes Russell is much improved. I don't think, you know, we probably give her as much credit, you know, for her improvement and how she stepped in. Jordan Canada, yes, we're riding the wave with her at this point because she's learning how to be a high-level point guard. But, you know, she's done well. I mean, this is a team that we gave zero chance. We were like, oh, man, they're not going to have Stewie. This is going to be tough. And then it was like, oh, they're not going to have Sue. Never mind. Like, we're not even going to Seattle. Like, we're not even talking about them. But they've got a great group. I mean, you know, Jewel Lloyd is still, to me, so untapped in terms of her potential. So, you know, that balance, but also that selflessness. Like, they just, like, there are no perennial all-stars. There are no, you know, four-time Olympic gold medals on this team. There's no four-time college champions on this team. I mean, these are a bunch of really underdog mentality type players who are working together. They're scrappy. I really like Seattle and where they're trending. And yeah, so I'm going with their hot.
All right, then. Well, that is hot or not. And we will see this upcoming week whether or not you ladies are right. So with that, let's move on into the second quarter.
Second quarter, Inside the Huddle.
All right, basketball fans, we are inside the huddle, which means we're going in depth. And when I say we're going in depth, we're going in on one of my favorite players in the WNBA. Now, I'm not just saying this. I know everybody's going to say, okay, now that she's got, you know, WNBA Player of the Week a couple times, like you're jumping on. No. If you rewind all the way back to the WNBA draft, actually, no. Was it the draft? I think I made the prediction. Okay, you saw it. So anyway, I made the prediction that Jonquel Jones was going to have an amazing year. And I probably said this every year that she's been in the league. But join us in welcoming to the show Jonquel Jones of the Connecticut Sun. Welcome.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Representing the Bahamas. Now, Jonquel, you have a great story, including your journey from the Bahamas. You're always represented. Is it 242? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yes. Got it. Yes, yeah. I always see you and Buddy with those numbers. So tell us a little bit about your journey, how you started playing basketball, and then kind of how you landed here in the WNBA at the end of that journey.
Yeah, so basketball has just always been a huge part of my family. My dad was a high school basketball coach, and I just remember him coaching and just going out there and watching him, you know, do a lot of that stuff. And I just fell in love with the game from that standpoint. My cousins all played. My grandmother had a basketball court in the backyard that my dad and my uncle built. And, you know, so we would all go down to my grandmother's house and play basketball all day, all night. I left the Bahamas in the ninth grade, and I moved over to Maryland. And I went there to high school. I went to Riverdale Baptist. I was there until I decided to go to college. Went to GW, and, you know, now I'm here in the league, so. Definitely had to make a lot of sacrifices to get where I am, and have a lot of people that were, you know, instilled a lot of great things in me and that allowed me to be where I am today.
Before I pass this on to Deb, because I know she's got a question for you, this is just random, right? So I think your transfer situation was a coaching change, right? Because you went to Clemson, and then you transferred to GW, right?
Yeah.
What? So, like, you know, college women's basketball is having all these transfers, like, right now.
Yeah.
And I know, again, your situation. Just tell us about, like, that process of leaving a school, what goes into that decision, and kind of how, if at all, you think it impacted your journey. Because I think it's important for fans to listen and hear and understand that from a player's perspective.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, get a hard time when they decide to transfer. For me, I think people that transfer, like, you know, three times, like, that's a lot. But I think everybody should have, you know, the opportunity to at least do it once, because even though you make a decision as a high schooler, and my decision was basically based on me, like, no one else was in my ear. You know, I made a decision that I felt was the right thing for me and going to Clemson at first. And, you know, once I got there and I really started to understand things a little bit better and, you know, just see how some of the stuff was going on, I just didn't think it was the right place for me to be. And I left, you know, in the middle of my, or closer to the end of my freshman year. So I made the decision quickly because I knew that that just wasn't the place where, you know, I was going to be in order to get better and get where I wanted to be. So I think whenever you're making a decision, you know, to better yourself and, you know, it's nothing selfish, but you have to, you know, you have to make the right decision that's going to help you to become, you know, what you want to be and, you know, get where you want to be. So I think people have to stop trying to judge it from the outside and, you know, understand that there's a lot of other things going into it other than their perspective. And people just try to see it from their point of view and they don't really see it from the athlete's point of view. So I think that's the way that they should try to look at it.
So I remember, I want to say maybe my second year in Minnesota or third. I was in Minnesota and we played in at GW. And yeah. I remember, I want to say we met, but my memory's terrible.
I remember that actually.
We met, yeah, right? You guys had practice and we met. That was the first time we met. And I remember when you guys left, I was speaking to Coach Sip and he was like, Dev, you know, I got this girl here. She's really good. Like, she's going to be in the league. She's going to be a great player. She can do everything. She's tall. She's really athletic. And he was just ranting on and on and on about you. And I'm like, okay, Sip, like, all right, cool. And since then, since you've been in the league, you have made these jumps every year, going from most improved to sixth woman to this year, you're absolutely killing. I want to know what your off season is looking like, because that's when you make those transitions and really take your game to another level. So what have your off seasons looked like?
Honestly, it's just been overseas. I think I've been in really good situations where I've had people around me that are really good at what they do. My first year I was in Korea and I was playing for Warrior Bank out there. And, you know, that coach, he's won a lot of championships. So their schedule was just hectic. Like, it was the hardest thing that I've ever had to do in my life in terms of, you know, just the running and the amount of stuff that we were doing on the court. And I think that's saying a lot because you know how college is, especially preseason and getting ready. So
Korea is a different level.
That was, for sure. So, you know, that was tough. My second year I went to China. And then I had a strength and conditioning coach. His name is Matt Houston, who was out there. And he worked with the Chinese national team. And, you know, he works with a lot of athletes as well. And he was out there with me. And we really just were getting it in. And they had a lot of skills coaches out there as well. So I think when I go overseas, I just try to work on new things that's going to, you know, better me. But, you know, you're out there playing as well. So, you know, you don't want to just stick to the things that are, you know, that you're used to because you're playing. So you try to move a little bit away from that and try to get to do other things that are going to help you to be better in the league. But I really think that I've lucked out in terms of the people that I've been with overseas. This last year I was in Russia in ECAT, and they had Jenny Moshak there as a strength and conditioning coach. She's worked at Tennessee for years, you know, with Pat Tillman and Candace Parker and all of those people. So I think I just try to always just take advantage of those opportunities and work as hard as I can just so that when I do come back, you know, I don't feel like I'm missing anything and I don't feel like I'm slower than anybody else. And, you know, just try to give myself a little competitive advantage.
Jonquil, so first and foremost, let me just say I'm a huge Connecticut Sun fan, but for the purposes of this podcast, I'm going to try to act like a professional, okay?
Here we go. She won't, but that's okay. She got a Connecticut Sun t-shirt under her outfit right now.
I'm trying to be a professional, okay? That's all. But honestly, over the last couple of years, I feel like the consensus has been everyone saying, you know, the Sun, this is the year for them to get better. This is the year for them to get better. And then the off season that happened, with the loss of Chinee, I think people kind of put it out of their mind like, well, this probably won't be the year that we see Connecticut make that jump. And to everyone, or not, maybe not everyone, but to some surprise, not only did you guys continue on that path, but you're the best in the league right now. What was the mentality of the team, coming into the season? And then after, you know, the departure of Chinee, what has been the mentality of the team that is keeping you guys at the level, of where you're playing right now?
I think the biggest thing that's in our minds is just that, you know, we've made it to the playoffs and we've basically gotten kicked out twice. And for us, it's basically like being in the first round because it's the first game that we've been playing. So for us, it's kind of feeling like we made it to the playoffs, but we keep having these early departures. And so it leaves a sour taste in your mouth, and it makes you want to just come back and play a little bit harder, do all of the little things that's necessary to win. And so I think that was the biggest mindset coming in. I think for me, I was definitely blindsided by the stuff that happened with Chiney, because I really was like in my own world in Russia. Like, and I know a lot of people say I'm kind of hard to reach when I'm overseas, but I'm really just so focused that I did not know what was going on. And so when I heard about it, I was taken aback and definitely didn't know, you know, what was going on behind the scenes. But I think coming into media day with all the questions and stuff that was happening and all the things that people were asking us behind the scenes, we kind of felt like people were already counting us out, that they weren't expecting us to be able to, you know, play at the same level that we were playing at. And so we definitely had a chip on our shoulder coming into the season feeling like, you know, people were just counting us out. And so we always have an underdog mentality. I think that's one of the reasons that we play so well. We always feel like we're being overlooked. But at the same time, our chemistry, our unselfishness, you know, and that mentality for the next man to step up, you know, when things aren't going the way that we think they should be going, is one of the reasons why we're good as well.
So you found out about Chiney overseas, like through the news?
I found out. I think I went on Instagram one day and I saw like that it had happened or something like that. Like, I was really shocked, honestly. I did not know.
Wow.
Yeah.
What does that do then? Because here's my thing, and I'm not afraid. This has been my problem, right? Like, as it pertains to you. Like, last year, I was like, I don't want Jonquel to come off the bench. I was like, everyone's like, oh, she won Sixth Woman of the Year. I'm like, and not that starting means everything. Like, I'm using a very, I'm sick. So I've been selfish this whole podcast. I'm just going to go ahead and warn you right now. Tariq and Tev can speak to this. So I'm like, I know it doesn't matter who starts, who comes off the bench, that kind of thing. But I'm like, Jonquel should be like on the floor all the time. So while I'm very happy about you winning Sixth Woman of the Year last year, obviously you are in a different role right now. Not that it's just Chiney's movement, because this may have been the case anyway, but you're in a very different role. You're your fourth year in the league. What do you think is different about what you'll need to provide for the Connecticut Sun this year for y'all to get over the hump?
I think I have to have an aggressive mentality on offense and defense. I think naturally I'm more of like a laid back person, and sometimes it kind of translates on the court. When I need to be more aggressive, I have to, you know, just have that mindset. And I think, you know, I've been watching a lot of film, watching all of our games over again, and just seeing some of the ways that I could be better. And I think that's one of the ways of not waiting for things to come to me, just going out there and trying to take things and being more aggressive in that way. I think also being a verbal leader. Jazz and AP are definitely our leaders. They've been our leaders since I got here in Connecticut. But I think I can also help in terms of that role of just kind of settling us down sometimes. And then also just, you know, just making sure that we're doing all the things that we need to do, all the little things in order to win basketball games.
And how do you, like, when you're as talented as you are and you can do a lot of things at your size, like you have a very versatile skill set, like, how do you determine, like, where you can be most effective or where you want to be? Obviously, you have a head coach. I mean, Kurt Miller's an outstanding coach, so he's going to try to move you around. But where do you kind of see the future of your game, or where do you want it to be, say, 3 years or 4 years from now? What will you be doing on the court?
Oh, man. I think you always want your efficiency to go up. So I think I've been increasing in terms of my efficiency, shooting from the three-point, all of that stuff. My free throw percentage has been better this year. So you always want your efficiency to go up. I think I like the way that I'm heading right now, just being more aggressive, honestly. Like, I really, that's a tough question. I think just constant improvement, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you played, because I always wondered about your skill set at your side. Did you play more guard when you were growing up playing basketball?
Yeah,
most
definitely, yeah. So I was, even when I moved from the Bahamas, I was still playing guard, and I kind of got a little bit, like, I got a growth spurt between, like, my junior and senior year in high school. So I was still kind of like playing that like 3-ish, sometimes 4, depending on who we had on the court in high school too. So like I was growing a lot. And even when I got into college, I was still growing. So I was definitely handling the ball more and, you know, playing a lot of that guard position. So that's why I'm able to handle the ball a little bit better and do some more things that I'm able to do on the outside.
Well, Jonquel, we all decided on this show that the Connecticut sun is hot. I mean, don't be surprised by Tarika saying that, because she's going to say that all year long,
all
regardless.
Year long.
But
the
you
sun
guys,
is hot.
Right? The sun is hot. Burn it down. So you guys have a lot of great things going for you. And I mean, we're excited to see. I mean, honestly, you know, my whole thing has been, I want to see what y'all do in the playoffs. Like, I'm not trying to say that your whole regular season is relevant. But
right.
I'm saying that.
That's how we feel too.
Right. I'm like, okay, let's see them get over the hump. I mean, what, right. Just as a parting words, what should fans know about Connecticut Sun? Like, what should they know about this team, in terms of your style of play or how you're made up, or why are you hot?
Yeah, we're hot because we play unselfish, an unselfish brand of basketball. If you want to see team basketball, you want to see the ball move from side to side. You want to see teammates that are genuinely happy for each other when they make great plays. I think you're going to be a fan of us because that's what we do. We love the game, and we try to show it every time we step on the court.
And if you want to see Kurt Miller, like, stomp up and down the sideline, too, because he gets, let me tell you, he gets worked up.
Yeah, if you want to see your coach do a heavenly stomp on the side, come back.
Okay.
I'm telling you, wait till I show up on the sideline pulling a Drake, rubbing his shoulders. I got you, coach.
You know what? Tarika, don't you even dare get close to that bench. Don't let her close to y'all, Jonquel. And give everybody our best. You know, I'm a huge Jasmine Thomas fan. I think she is, like, one of the greatest leaders in the WNBA right now. Now and then Courtney Williams. I mean, does anybody have more sauce than her? I mean, she's just the drip game is like for real. Like, seriously, she just is so she has her own world, you know, that she kind of lives in, right?
Yeah,
I love her. Yeah, she does. Well, give everyone our best. Amber as well. We love her. You guys have great leadership there. And keep representing the islands, man.
Yes, most definitely.
Thank you for your time, Jonquel.
Thank y'all for having me.
All right, we'll see you soon.
Third quarter, scouting report.
All right, basketball fans. Well, this is a bittersweet moment for me as we get ready to interview our next guest, because I'm a little sad, but I'm also very excited. In case you missed the big news, the Cleveland Cavaliers, recently named, actually June 12th, so not very long ago, one of their new assistant coaches. If you have not been paying attention, Coach Beilein is now the head coach there. There's all kind of new things happening in Cleveland. But their new assistant coach is someone that is near and dear to our game of women's basketball, and a near dear friend of mine. Her name is Lindsay Gottlieb. And we're losing one of our great women's basketball coaches. But she's trailblazing, and she's joining us today on the show. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hi, LaChina. I'm not leaving you. Still friends.
I feel like you're leaving us.
No, and I'll always be connected to women's basketball. I mean, it's the game is my love, and I'll be in a different seat now, but I'm certainly going to stay connected to all my friends in women's college basketball and the WNBA, and actually hope that this move allows me to be just an advocate and supporter of women's basketball, in addition to trying to do my day job in the NBA.
I mean, it's huge. I mean, what you're doing, this hire, like, we don't see this happening where the NBA, and very smart on their part, has sought out, you know, one of our stars from women's basketball to say, hey, come and be on our NBA staff. Tell us how this happened and why this was the right move for you right now.
Yeah, you're right. It is very different, I think, than what anyone else has done. And first and foremost, I mean, Adam Silver, you know, and the Spurs organization with hiring Becky began to open doors that were so monumental, I think, for those of us in the game to be able to think about having opportunities. But I also loved my job. You know, you've seen me, LaChina, around our young women and doing what I did at Cal. So I was not looking to go anywhere. I've never, you know, pursued any other job in women's college basketball. But when Kobe Altman, the GM of the Cavs, reached out to me and asked me to talk, I thought it would be more of a high-level discussion about, you know, where are women going in this game or how can I diversify my staff. I didn't think it was going to be a, hey, we're building a staff and want you to be a part of it. So when he came at me with that kind of conversation, I really had to think about it. And then it became not just, you know, I want to be in the NBA, which has always been sort of a dream, but more so that this situation was so unique in that the way they're trying to build this organization with the Cavs, you know, we need to do it with player development. We know we need to do it with culture building. Coach Beilein is new. I really connected with him, and I believed that I could add value here and help this team do what we're trying to do, and at the same time learn a ton, and hopefully open some doors for other people as well. So all of that combined, I just felt like it was the right time and the right opportunity.
Hi, Lindsay, it's Devereaux.
Hi, Devereaux.
So I am like a huge advocate for representation. And I think that, you know, like being able to see yourself in certain positions is what allows people to really turn the corner and think that they can make it there. So this is a huge, huge hire for women just in general in sports. I would love to know, like, how do you think moving forward this will push, you know, like the bar as far as getting more women into those higher up jobs in men's basketball?
Well, I appreciate that mentality. You must have played for Muffet McGraw. she's a great one when it comes to pushing representation. You're absolutely right. And I would say to my young women at Cal all the time, we need more African-Americans in position of power in our game. We need more women doing things so that other people can see themselves in it. And what I felt like is while the NBA was starting to open doors for women, we hadn't seen someone, you know, with a high level college job go to the NBA and sort of come in at a higher level, so to speak. And my feeling was someone needs to do it. Someone needs to leave, you know, being a Power Five head coach and go be an assistant coach so that eventually maybe the thought process is the top women's coaches could go be head coaches in the NBA if someone felt like they were the right fit. I also want other, you know, female coaches to say, see me in a role and say, I could do that. Or I could go coach women's college basketball, or I could go, you know, in the WNBA. It's not that one's better than the other. It's just that you want those opportunities out there. So I do hope, you know, my first and foremost, I want to do a great job every single day, you know, in whatever I'm asked to do here. But in doing that, I do think it opens doors for other people, and that's ultimately where we want to get to. And I think the NBA, as much as any professional league, sees the value in that. You can't exclude half the population and expect to get the best minds.
Coach, as you have started to join the team and meet the guys around, what has that experience been like for you? I'm pretty sure that they're very welcoming, but talk a little bit about what it's like to be in that environment.
Yeah, it's been amazing so far. Only a couple of our guys have been through just yet while I've been here. Deli was in yesterday, and Larry Nance has been here because he lives locally. But I'm looking forward to meeting everybody. But the staff has been unbelievable. And first and foremost, the culture here is people want to learn from and be around, I think, minds, and that tone is set by Coach Beilein. You know, he's willing to listen to anybody. He has said that, you know, we need to build this the right way. So I've had an incredibly, you know, welcoming introduction here. And I think for me, I'm a relational person. I'm hoping that won't be different with guys, you know, from women. And I think people know when you can make them better, they're willing to listen. And when you care about them as people, you can push them a little bit harder. So I think I'm going to take my time with, you know, being who I am and being authentic and looking forward to building those relationships here as well, which is, I think, something that I've done pretty well throughout my career. So I hope that doesn't change.
You've been awesome at that. And while I'm being selfish about you not being in women's basketball, that's the part about what you've done that I will miss the most. Now, I know you'll still have touch points with young women, but that day to day, I mean, I was there in 2013, you know, interviewing you with tears coming out of your eyes on your way to the Final Four with a group of young women that I don't know that there are very many teams. And I'm not just saying this because Dev is on this call. I actually believe this. Your players, Muffet's players, are two examples of young women that leave those programs, understand who they are as people, you know, have a collective idea of where they want to go and what makes them special. Like, you've done great work with these young women. So that part, I'm just curious, like, when you are having such an impact, how challenging is that decision to then leave kind of that impact and go somewhere else? And then how did you know that right now was the time to do that?
Well, first off, you know, the young women that I've coached over my career were the first ones to text saying, you know, when I took this job, saying we're so proud of you and, you know, excited for you. So it's funny, you know, I think they understand that what I was trying to do is, you know, build people capable of doing anything. And so I hope by me doing this big jump that is a little scary and sort of bold and different, I hope that eventually will give, you know, them the courage to do whatever it is in their life that they want to do. But you're right. I was very much looking forward to coaching the team that we had coming back, and I was super locked in with the kids that we were recruiting, and there was no part of me that was looking to leave, right? I mean, literally, I've gotten calls from other, you know, college programs and always said thanks. I'm flattered, but no thank you. And this was the first time that I really listened, and once I started listening, it just kind of became one of those times where it just kept feeling like I was compelled that I had to do this. So the struggle then, once I felt like it was what I wanted to do and really felt compelled to do, the struggle obviously was, you know, this idea of leaving the people that are most important to me in my life, other than my family. Obviously, Jordan and Patrick will be coming along, but that was the hard part. And honestly, LaChina, it was not a quick thing. I then kind of struggled with that internally for a little while. And ultimately, what I came to was the fact that the 13 young women or however many each year that I coach, the impact on their lives is really important to me. But I do think I'll be able to hopefully impact more like, you know, a million if I do something like this. And I
generations. And I this like, is yeah, yes, game changing.
And I wouldn't lose that connection with the young women that I have. And I hope that at some point, you know, Mackenzie Forbes, who's, you know, great player at Cal, maybe she becomes a head coach in the NBA one day, or maybe she runs for president one day because, you know, I was in her life, you know, influencing her in some ways. Those are the things I thought about. Or, you know, we have a young woman on our team now who wants to be a GM, and she's super smart into analytics. You know, if I have a say, maybe I could hire her somewhere one time. So ultimately, I felt like, as hard as it is to not be in their lives every day, which is really important to me, that I still will be, but in a different role. And there's no question it's tough to leave the job that I had. And at the same time, you know, I think you know you're doing something right if it's hard to leave. It shouldn't ever feel easy to leave a place that you care about. And so it was a hard moment there, but ultimately I think it was for the best.
Well, I think you're very obviously going to have a large impact still taking this role, because it's such a big step for women in basketball, especially on the men's side. But the NBA, you've been playing or you've been coaching women's basketball for a long time. And the NBA, although basketball is basketball, the NBA is different. So I definitely would like to know what you want to bring from your knowledge of the women's game and what you think that you can use to help impact the players that are maybe on the NBA side that may be a little bit distinctly different from the women's side.
Yeah, we've had 3 days here of staff meetings. It's been unbelievable. You know, there's so much for me to learn terminology wise. And at the same time, all the concepts, I mean, I've been coaching for 20 years. It's not like it's all new to me. And so it's been this really neat mental process of kind of learning terminology. J.B. Bickerstaff will kind of run the defense here. He's unbelievable. He's been a 2-time NBA head coach. And sort of learning terminology. Also, Coach Beilein giving me the free rein to add, hey, what do you think about that? What have you guys done? And I'm sitting here like, well, against Stanford, we did this. And against, you know, and they listen because it's just basketball, right? So I think from the X's and O's standpoint, I'm going to do a lot of studying. 24-second shot clock is different. Some of the actions, you know, and you know, things you run are slightly tweaked. But really, I do think I have a base of knowledge that can be helpful to give a different perspective. And I think they want a little bit of a different perspective on some things. And then I do think I have a ability to maybe take the high-level concepts and translate that into relatable terms for young guys, right, and using film or breakdown drills to get the messages across. And I want to be part of a unit here that helps this team get better. So there's so many things I'm excited about, and and also, you know, eager to learn, but hopefully add value in as well. I think coach values, you know, my ability to see the big picture as a head coach. You know, in staff meetings, he'll say, hey, you know, Lindsay, you've been running an organization. What do you think? So I think I can give the bigger perspective, and at the same time do hope that I can jump in just specifically with drills and cuts and, hey, you know, tactics that can help us, you know, win a game. And so it's a little bit of a mix of everything, but I'm really excited.
Coach, one last question for me. Coming into a position like this, you know, we've seen other women who, there's 10 total who've been able to make that step into the NBA, and a lot of them have a WNBA background, mostly as a player. For you, though, do you feel any pressure coming from a coaching background, coming from a head coaching background, from where you feel like you have to set an expectation for yourself? I know sometimes we feel as women that if we don't take advantage of an opportunity, that a door may close for someone to come after us. Do you feel any pressure or any expectation that you must meet or must have with taking on this role?
I think that anytime, like you said, Dev, like, you represent a larger group. I do want to do a great job today and tomorrow and the next day and 2 years from now. Number one, to help this organization that has shown a great commitment to me and that has believed in me. So that's really why I want to do, you know, the best job I can to help the organization. But I do think that if I just come in here and add value and treat people the right way and work really hard, that, yeah, I do hope it makes other organizations think, huh, you know, as we're looking to fill spots, can we look to women's college basketball? Can we find the right person from a different realm that may offer perspective? I do think about that. I think I would be in some ways remiss if I didn't think about who else I can, you know, help, you know, by doing a good job in this role. But no pressure is going to be greater than the pressure I put on myself just to bring, you know, value and help this team and help this organization.
And Coach, last question for me here. We have a lot of coaches that listen to this podcast, and if they are weighing, you know, if they're thinking about, okay, am I going to go maybe women's basketball college route, or I'm going NBA route? Because I know you've been around the NBA a lot, you know, even before getting this appointment. But right. What are some things to consider that, from your standpoint, if they're considering a path on the NBA side or in women's college, that may be a little bit different, or how to differentiate where you belong maybe at this point in your career?
That's an excellent question. I think it all begins with kind of mastering your craft the best that you can, because you can't add value anywhere if you're not, you know, spending time getting better at whatever it is that you want to do, X's and O's, or, you know, recruiting, building relationships. I feel like all of the skills that I've learned and tried to perfect over 20 years are going to help me in this role. And then you figure out where your niche is. So I actually, you know, I didn't dislike recruiting the way some people do. But it's nice, you know, at whatever time you go home, not to have to come out of practice, you don't have to run to your phone. You know, look at who you need to call. I have a, you know, to obviously gain experience here and see exactly what it's going to be like. But there's different things about the pro life. There's a little less practice time. There's a lot more games. You guys will get a kick out of. I was talking to JB and Coach Beeline last night saying, you know, I'm stressed about 82 outfits. You guys don't have to think about that. Guys,
Swin,
how am I supposed to come up with 82 outfits?
Swin said the same thing. Yeah.
Yes. Come on, right? That's something I need to. So, you know, I think it'll be different with the pro game here. But I think For women, I think the whole idea is that we want to open up opportunities so that they can have a love of the game, have a love of people, have a love of impacting lives, and then decide what level is best. You know, some of the best coaches I know are high school coaches, and that might suit someone lifestyle-wise. You know, with a young son, you know, Jordan, I'm going to have to see, you know, there's more off season here. So maybe there's more time to spend with family. And at the same time, there's more travel. So I think each person has to figure out what might be the way for them to do their job professionally, how they want to, and also to balance that with family life. But you can't get anywhere without being a good person, a hard worker, adding value, being a team player. I mean, all the things that I think made me who I was as a college coach is what attracted, you know, Kobe and Coach Beeline to me. And so I always go back to do a good job, you know, and be the type of person you would want to hire, and then all the opportunities will open up to you.
Well, we are so excited for you, and I feel embarrassed because I think when we were texting back and forth, first of all, the fact that you made time understanding what your life is like right now in the transition, like, this is one reason why I love you, and I will just say that flat out, because you did not have to do this, and you always try to juggle and be there when you can and be a great representation for the game. So we appreciate this time, but I'm almost embarrassed that yesterday I was like, oh shoot, I'm sorry, I've been running all over the place. Like I was meant to text you back, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, it's been crazy. And I'm like, I can't believe I just told her it's been crazy. Like, imagine what her life is like right now. Like, you've got transition, you've got son, you know, moving your life around. So thank you so much for doing this for us. We're so happy for you. And yes, I am the selfish one asking questions in this whole group. Like, everybody is, yes, Lindsay. And we are. I'm happy. You are trailblazing, and this is going to affect millions of young girls.
You.
So relax in this role.
I'll just tell you this, LaChina. Like, we're doing pre-draft workouts, and, you know, we're meeting with the new staff and doing all these things. But the media people came in to me and said, okay, we have all these requests. I said, I'm doing Around the Rim, I'm doing LaChina. These are my people.
Yes!
We're doing this and everything else we can. I guess I'm doing something after tomorrow, but that's how it is, right? I mean, you were there, you know, for our program at Cal all the time, and I don't expect the relationships to go away. So I was absolutely going to talk to you guys, and I hope we can do it again sometime. You know, get me in the middle of the season.
Yes.
I
have
a different perspective on NBA life.
We'll get you 40 outfits in, and we'll still be stalking Jordan, just so you know, on Twitter. So that won't go away either. We will be very much invested in what your son is doing. Are you going to be an NBA head coach one day?
I promise you, I'm just trying to do a good job tomorrow and the next day. But
okay.
I hope that maybe this speeds up, you know, the opportunity for somebody. Maybe it's me, maybe it's somebody else. But I do hope that we see a female head coach in the NBA sooner than later, whoever that may be. But I'm trying to help the Cavs win some games this season.
Well, you have three Cavs fans on the line, and we'll be watching you this season. Thank you so much for making the time, Coach, and good luck with everything. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you all. See you soon.
Fourth quarter, out of bounds.
All right, basketball fans. So a couple weeks ago, we celebrated National Gun Violence Awareness Day. And one of the leading advocates for gun violence awareness is none other than our co-host, Dev Peters. So we definitely wanted to take a second to give you an opportunity to speak on your W Wear Orange initiative that you had that caused all of these wonderful players in the league to wear their orange shirts.
Yeah, so maybe towards the end of last year, maybe like August or September, I partnered with Every Town, which is an organization that works with gun safety and gun violence awareness. And it was something that I've been wanting to do for a while. It was one of those things where I felt like I needed to be doing more in my community, especially with Chicago. Having that as such a big issue, and I kind of didn't know where I stood with it and where I could help, and ended up connecting with this guy that I work with now, and he had a relationship with Every Town, and he linked us once I talked to him about my desire to do more in terms of gun safety and gun violence awareness. And so we partnered up at the end of last year, and I've really been working with them, doing a lot of advocacy. We've gone and done lobby days in Springfield, our capital. And so I've done a lot with them. And then every year they do the Wear Orange campaign on Gun Violence Awareness Day. And we actually just started an athletic council as well with Every Town, where they have different athletes, which we all are working and advocating for gun violence awareness. So I wanted to get the WNBA involved, and obviously the W has been really big when it comes to social issues. That's something that I think comes natural to a lot of the players. And whenever an issue comes up, usually the W is one of the first leagues as a whole to contribute to the conversation. That's been the case for a while now. And so when this opportunity came up, I really wanted to get the WN involved, and it was awesome. It was so many players that participated and really just pushed the cause and got the awareness out there and done a lot. And even now with Natasha Cloud, she's doing a lot in DC with the school that she they went and did I think some they did something with like a reading day or something at the elementary school, and she found out that they had some issues with bullets coming through their windows at the school.
I saw that.
And so she's even stepped up in the last week or so and done a lot with advocating for gun violence awareness. And so it was just an awesome cause and initiative, and people were really receptive to it. We made those t-shirts specifically for the W. That's why you have not got your shirt yet.
I mean, and we are the W.
I know. Tarika, it was just,
no, we're really not.
It was just for the players, and it blew up to the point. I got so many messages, y'all, about those shirts and how people can help. It was really amazing and awesome. And I had to reach out to them like, we need to get more shirts, y'all, because more people want to be involved and want to do this. So it was awesome. It was a really good cause. It actually was not started by Everytown. It was started by the family and friends of a young girl, Hadia Pendleton, who was killed in Chicago on the South Side. And it was a week after she performed at Obama's second inauguration. And they wanted to raise awareness, so they started the Wear Orange campaign, which basically represents, because hunters wear orange when they hunt because they want to be seen. And so it's a way to show that we want safer streets, and we want kids to be able to go out and play and be kids and not have to worry about these type of things. And, you know, I mean, it's just an issue where, you know, this is not something people should have to worry about, going to work and have to think about this or going to school. It's just a social issue that really has to, we have to bring more awareness to, because it's a large problem in the entire country. And so they started Wear Orange, and every town linked up with them. And it's really just blown up into a great initiative. And it was really cool to be a part of it. And then to get the W and have them be a part of it, and then also have them like, really show out. Like, it was to the point
in the tennis shoes, they had the orange.
They showed out. And, like, I mean, working with Everytown for the last, you know, 8 months or so, one thing that I've realized is that they have, you know, like, athletes can be kind of difficult. Like, so they've had some experiences, you know, with some of these organizations where, you know, they have athletes participate, but sometimes they're not as involved and they're not, you know, just as committed as they would like them to be. And, you know, they were extremely impressed with the W players. And, you know, I just think this just shows what type of women they are. The W has some amazing women and amazing people, period. And they showed out. I was so excited. It was awesome.
Oh, Deb, we're so proud of you. So if someone is listening right now, how can they help? Like, if there's somebody listening to this podcast.
So usually in pretty much every city, they have, you know, smaller groups where you can get involved with gun violence awareness. One of the smaller sectors of Everytown is Moms Demand. They have groups everywhere. So if you are in a city that has a smaller group that can you can join, if that's your interest, always do that and try to be in touch with them and do as much as you can there. If not, if you're not that type of person that wants to get like your hands dirty like that, always, when you can, retweet, put up on social media when you see a story, because raising awareness is important. I think one of the biggest issues when it comes to gun violence is we've become kind of numb mm-hmm. to it, because it's happened so much. So anytime that you see a story that is really touching you and you see a story about a victim, retweet it and put it out there so people see it and understand that this is still a problem that we need to fix. And also call your senators, your local governments, and talk to them about their stance on gun violence and gun safety, and what are they doing to really help the problem. So those are just simple ways that you can help from home. You don't have to like go out of your way to do anything like that, but it definitely makes a difference.
Well, Deb, we appreciate what you're doing. You know, gun violence has impacted all of us. I've shared before that my brother was killed due to gun violence. I don't talk about it very often, but it's something that's near and dear to my heart. I know that Tarika's passionate about it. And sometimes we sit back and we watch what's going on in the world and we don't do anything to help. And not only are you doing something to help, but you're using the voices of some amazing women in the WNBA to push that agenda forward. And I know, being a Chicago native in particular, where gun violence can get really, really bad, that this is something that hits home for you as well, even personally. So thank you for leading the charge, fans. Yeah, do what Dev said and wear some kind of orange, and she's going to find out how we can get those shirts. Hopefully she'll know by next week's show, and we hope that you'll be back for next week. Thank you so much for tuning in to Around the Rim. Please remember to subscribe, rate us, comment, any questions. We're on Twitter at Around the Rim Pod. We are on email at aroundtherimpodcast@gmail.com. My Twitter handle is at LaChyna Robinson. Tarika is at SheKnowsSports_. And Devro Peters, who loves to go at people that tweet her, is at MissPeters14. That's it, y'all. That's right. That's it. That's the show. Is that right? MissPeters14?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm pretty good. All right, y'all. Next week.
Thank you for listening to Around the Rim. Check out more podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app.